How the fun part begins. Are you... wait. Matt. You Matt? Who are you?
Jake.
You're Jake. All right. Wait, who are you? Oh, you were here enrolled, but you were not here. Elijah Rappaport or something like that, right?
Yeah. Okay, good. Should I just sit in a different spot if I wasn't there? I mean, like, if I was there the other day and someone else was in my spot.
Who's in your spot?
Yeah.
Who?
Right here. But, like, I don't...
You sitting in front, the last class.
Who are you?
Blake.
No, you were actually in reverse.
Okay,
I was. You were in front.
I don't care.
Just sit there. That's fine. Unless, who are you?
Matthew.
Oh, man, are you Hennessy?
Yeah.
All right, go in the back over there. Oh, you know what it is? There's an extra desk in this row. That's why it's off. All right, so I can do this. I can adapt. I'm going to just be all messed up all day. So Matt Hennessy. Work with me. Ramatulai. Was that good?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, close.
All right, not too bad. I'll work on it. I promise I'll say it wrong for about a month, then I'll get it down. All right, so we got Hennessy over there. You are Elijah. Elijah Rappaport. So you get a yellow dot for today and an X for Tuesday. And Zaria? That's you, right? Excellent. You don't look like a Joe.
Me?
Yeah. Who are you? Oh, yeah, you were supposed to be in the class. You're Joe.
Yeah.
All right, I can adapt. I can do this. Was Osborne, right?
Yeah.
All right. So we'll do this one time, and then on Tuesday. Wait, no, you were here. What am I doing? That was done. All right, and you are Giselle. Giselle Mary, though, right? Your full name is Giselle Mary? Okay. But you just like Giselle. Do you want it Giselle Marie or Giselle? No, whichever you like. How about if I say, hey, you? I like you already. Easy going. Excellent. So, X. Start. All right. Is it Noana? Nana? Yeah. All right. You Garrett? Okay. Rolling now. You Mike?
Yes.
Outstanding. You Tyler?
Yeah.
Very good. Are you related to an Eric Godin?
No.
Okay, very good. And you Abigail?
Yeah.
Excellent. Hi.
Hey.
How are you?
Good.
Not as cold as I was about 5 minutes ago. And I'm sure you'll feel the same. You Paige? Very good. And Lauren?
Yeah.
Okay, very good. And Sydney? Excellent. And no Madeline. Okay. So we have Elijah. And this is Giselle. Okay, very good. But no Quentin, right? No Quentin? And no... I think it's Mickelin? Mickelin?
Colin?
What?
Coutier?
Coutier? Yeah.
I don't think he's in this one.
Oh. All right. Well, he was as of yesterday, but maybe he dropped. That's fine. All right, so that was a process. It'll get easier. Again, I'll get to the point where I'll know who you all are, and I'll be able to just check you in. Second, how many people took the quiz yesterday? Okay, the good news, did you watch the video too? All right, the bad news, good news, is I realized that there was a mistake on it. Someone contacted me, fucked up the dates, apparently. So on the ones that the dates were off, I will give you credit
for it, whether it's right or wrong. But there are the two dates that I know that I screwed up on. One, when are topics due for your papers? What?
26.
1 week 26. From tomorrow,
yeah,
right. And I'll talk about that in a minute. And second, when is the final exam?
May 9th.
Not the 19th. May 9th. That's the last possible day. Those are the two things that I'm pretty sure for your class I screwed up on. But I'll double check. See, I went in midday after someone said it, and I did make the corrections, but I don't know if the corrections went into effect for the people who took it after I fixed it. So I'm going to go in and I'll take a look at it. But if I make a mistake, I never penalize you. All right, topics. As I said in the video, you have to write a paper. And the directions are on my website, facilamanic.com, in the paper section. Read that through multiple times, like I said in the video. Topics for your paper can be anything related to this class. So, any event that happened in Europe or impacted Europe from the time of the Crusades all the way up to the French Revolution. It's very broad. It's very open. Yes?
Can we get to your website for Engage?
Yes. In Engage, I think it's what's announcements. I don't remember the sequence, but you go down a couple, there's something that says Professor or Proflamanic.com. It's an active link. You can click it. But definitely check that out, because that's where the outlines are, too. And that's where the class recordings are, and all the important stuff. So, topics can be about anything you want. Do you like war? You talk about a war. Small war, not a big war, because there really wasn't any major big wars that we're going to cover. You can talk about technological advancements. You could talk about medical advancements. You could talk about something cultural, styles of food. You know, it's really open-ended to a degree. The only catch is it has to be within our time frame, and it has to be linked to the topic of the class, which is Western civilization. So, in your class last semester, off the top of my head, I had students write about, just to give you some ideas, they did individual people that contributed to the Renaissance. So, I remember one person did one on Raphael, you know, one of the painters. You know, it was pretty good. I liked it. I enjoyed it. Another person did one, I think, on the Second Crusade. That one wasn't too good because it was too broad. They didn't do a good job of narrowing it down. So they tried talking about an event that lasted several years, involved tens of thousands of people, tried covering it all, and in the end, they really didn't cover anything. So one was successful because what they did is they focused on just the style of Raphael's painting, you know, the contributions he made to the world of art. Didn't try talking about his life, because as I told the student, you're not going to be able to talk about someone's life in a paper, which at the end of the day, when you put everything in that has to be there, it's not going to be no more at the most than 8 pages long. The person who wrote about the Second Crusades, the mistake they made is they tried covering it all, and it just wasn't enough. There are multi-volume books written on the Crusades. So how can you try taking all of that information and condensing it down to a 6-page paper? You can't. So that's just something I want you to keep in mind. You can write about anything you want. Think about what you're writing before you pick something. And ask yourself, can I cover this effectively in 6 to 8 pages? If I can, spot on. And of course, when you start sending me topics, I will comment back. How do you send me topics? What?
Email.
Very good. You can send it either to my Anna Marie account, or you can send it to my private account. I think I still have one that goes through my website. I think I have like a Gmail account. I don't remember what I put on the syllabus or in Engage or on my website. But multiple ways to contact me. All you need to do, you don't have to send me a thesis statement. Professor, I want to write about the development of soccer. You know how soccer was invented? Gruesome. It was invented on the English battlefields. When the knights used to cut off people's heads, they entertained themselves.
So, I mean, again, you can get creative, but just remember the scope. Okay? We'll talk more about the topics. But again, keep in mind, they're due by next Friday. I don't have you on Friday, so I'll give you like that last reminder on next Thursday. But just don't forget. And if you want to figure something out, the easiest thing you can do is go into Engage, where your book is, find the textbook, open it up, and look at the table of contents. Go through it. Is there something that I actually might have learned about in high school out of all the topics that are going to be covered? And that's where you start. Something you know about, that's always a good place to start, and something you're interested in. If you can research something you kind of know something about and you're interested in, you'll have a great time writing this assignment. It's something you actually could bang out in a weekend. I know, because I always have last-minute procrastinators that tell me like the day before the paper's due toward the end of the semester, oh my God, I haven't even started yet. My response is good luck, because usually what ends up happening is they don't go back and check all the instructions and they lose lots of points. But we'll deal with that when we get to that point in the semester. All right. Yes?
So just to clarify, it's going to be 6 to 8 pages long. It has to be.
Well, listen to how I said it. There are instructions on ProfessorLemanic.com on the actual length that I'm going to grade you on. But what I'm telling you is at the end of the day, when you put everything together, that's what you should expect to have. So if you end up with more, that's fine. Just don't kill me. I had one student for this school with this assignment send me a 35-page paper. I didn't penalize him. That didn't bother me. I read it all the way through, but I'm like, really? He's like, I'm sorry, professor. I just had a lot of fun writing it, and I just went to town. I'm like, all right, whatever. Yeah, if at the end of the day, when it's all said and done, that's what you should be looking at. So if you end up with like 3 pages, you know you're off. Any other questions? Awesome. All right, like I said, your book is inside Engage. It's a digital book. You don't have to buy a book. Oh, that's convenient, but I'm never going to get out there. What's Monday's date? It's not the 22nd. Oh, it is the 22nd. Nah, I'm not going out to Pittsfield. All right. Sorry, that was money I just turned down. What the heck was I saying?
You're asking for the dates and the book Engage.
Oh, the book Engage, yeah. Book Engage. All right. So the book is provided free. Like I said, I don't teach out of the book, but I follow along the book. So the first chapter in the book covers the Crusades. Please, if you haven't done so, open it up and read it at some point. The more that you can do to go over this information, the easier time you'll have with the test. It shouldn't be that hard. But again, I have students fail just because they don't put the effort in. If you put the effort in, this should be an easy grade. Should be. But we'll see. So, last class, talking about the Crusades, the launch, we know there was a lot of politics going on. And again, it may be cloaked in religion, the Christians going after the Muslims. But remember, it was more politics. More politics. The East and the West did not get along. What drove them apart? Yes, it was interpretation of the Bible. I get that. But again, that's politics. Less so, because what ended up happening is you had the political rulers getting involved. Of course, what precipitated the Crusades, what triggered it, is when the Seljuks came in, who had a different religious perspective than the Abbasids, seized Jerusalem and changed the policy. The previous rulers were tolerant. Let anyone go. It was an open city. You want to go to the sea? Do business? Do business. By the way, that's the secret to success. Don't fall into the racist trap. Doesn't matter what anybody looks like or what they think. This is the only thing that's important. If someone wants to give you money because you're going to provide them a service, just do it. Life was peaceful in Jerusalem for hundreds of years. There were merchants of all color, religion, and faith. Everyone was peacefully living, doing business with one another. But politics got involved. Christians were driven out. Many of them were slaughtered, crucified. The Jews, many of them were driven out as well. And at the end of the day, it triggered that reaction. But it took time to respond because Constantinople, tried contacting the Pope, because the Pope was the figure that could unite the different European kingdoms. But the kings were fighting with the Pope. The Pope was fighting with the Patriarch, and no one was getting along. So it took nearly 25 years to respond. But the response would come. The first response was the People's Crusade, and as we saw, that was a mess. I alluded to the Reconquista. That was when the Spanish rulers began purging the Iberian Peninsula of all of the Muslims and the Jews. There was this religious fervor driven by economics. Terra Nullia, what did the Pope say as a law for the Catholics? Terra Nullia, I said this last, talked about this last class. What is it? What was the significance of nobody's land?
No one that was not a Christian could own land.
Exactly. So if you know that there's a non-Christian on land, what legally can you do? Take it. And what happens if you kill them? You know, big deal, right? Because they are Muslims or heretics or pagans. Call them whatever you want. They're the bad guys. Oh, and by the way, what happens if you do these crusades, spiritually speaking? You get an indulgence. You are forgiven. Now keep in mind, you're not forgiven for what you do tomorrow. An indulgence is forgiveness for what you did yesterday. Politically speaking, why would the Pope give this?
Well, money. Fight for him.
So he can get people willing to go and fight. And who does he want fighting?
Warriors.
Warriors. And what did warriors do yesterday? They kill people. Exactly. And what does the Bible say vis-a-vis like murder?
Sin.
Yeah. Yeah. So, what?
The Pope, the Pope make it look as if it is not a sin, but he said, are forgiven for what he did yesterday. So they won't feel bad that, okay, I've killed somebody, I've murdered somebody, it's a sin.
Exactly, it's justified. So you killed someone yesterday, you are someone willing to engage in violence. That's the people who the Pope wants to sign up. Because he knows, in order to reclaim Jerusalem, they're going to have to kill people. They're going to have to kill lots of people. And by the way, I've talked to combat veterans, men who served in our military during wartime. They all say the same thing. The first kill is the hardest. But once you kill somebody, it's no big deal. It gets easier because you become desensitized to it. So the Pope knew he needed warriors that were willing to kill, because the only way to take the land back was to kill the current occupants. And that's what he got. When a group of princes from the different European kingdoms announced they would be willing to participate in the crusade. No kings, though, but princes. Among the leaders who were willing to go, not that you need to remember the names, I'm not going to put them up on the screen, was the eldest son of William the Conqueror. Anyone know who William the Conqueror was? What did he conquer? Any idea? William was the Duke of Normandy, who in 1066 sailed across the English Channel and conquered England. His oldest son, Duke Robert, got involved. Why? He wanted more land, more wealth. The brother of the King of France, Count Hugh, got involved. Hugh got involved because his brother already had a son. So there was no chance he was going to become a king. So he's going to go to fill his bank account to get opportunity. Because there were these famous princes, soldiers rallied to their leaders. In total, it's estimated they put together a military force of about 40,000. 40,000 men. Knights, infantry, trained warriors. Skilled warriors. Guess where they got their skills? I alluded it to last class. What were the Europeans doing for decades and decades and decades on end? No idea? They had been fighting against one another. The French were fighting against the Germans, who were fighting against the Italians, fighting against the Spanish, just like they've always done throughout history. So these guys had gotten skills fighting against one another. They were hardened veterans. And they were willing to now go fight for the Pope to get the indulgence, forgiveness for what they did, and opportunity. Rewards in the here and now and the thereafter. Now, we're not going to get into the details because it's too complicated to talk about it. Like I said last class, this is just a survey. We're going to kind of get the gist. And gistly speaking, this was the most successful out of all the Crusades. Because this military force, filled with battle-hardened veterans, did not lose a battle. They came, they saw, they conquered. Four armies left from Europe going different routes, some by land, some by sea. They all managed to get into the Middle East, and they engaged in war. And they liberated, or conquered, depending upon your perspective, the major cities in the Middle East at the time. They conquered Nicaea, which is right there. They conquered Edessa, they conquered Antioch, they conquered all of Anatolia, which is modern Turkey. But most importantly, they made it all the way down to Jerusalem, and they seized the city. They accomplished their goals. But here's the interesting thing. Alexios sent word to the Pope and asked if he could send warriors to help liberate Jerusalem. Well, now what? They seized the land. Now what are they going to do with it? Well, the expectation of the Byzantines were they would give it back to Constantinople. Because at one point, before the rise of Mohammed, all of the Middle East was part of the Eastern Roman Empire. Just about everybody who lived in the Middle East were Christians. So the expectation of Alexios was, well, the good Christians from Europe are going to give the land back to us. It should be ours after all. But guess what all the princes who had no chance of being kings in their own country decided to do? What would you do? You led an army, you conquered a city, what would you do with it?
Take control of it.
What?
They took control of it.
That's exactly what they did. The Pope said they could. Terra nullius. They took the land and they made their own kingdoms. They carved out the major crusader kingdoms. The kingdom of Edessa, the kingdom of Antioch, the kingdom of Jerusalem, the kingdom of Tripoli. I'll go back to that one. Each of the four principal princes named themselves to be king. And they took control of these lands just as they would if they were in Europe. They established governments, they imposed taxes, they made laws. And the Seljuks were driven away from the coastline.
Questions? Yes.
So like each prince made like their own like rules and like different taxes and stuff?
Yeah. Well, each prince declared themselves to be a king in their own individual kingdoms. Not a bad deal. But the Pope said he could. Yeah.
Yes, sir. So since they created their own kingdoms, is there something like this among them?
Yes, they had a loose-knit alliance. Because after all, they collaborated to conquer all of the regions. So basically the idea was if either the Seljuks, or that's going to be the next click, the Muslim state of the Fatimids, which was once in Egypt, they would launch a huge army and attempt to reclaim the land, but soldiers from all of the estates joined together and actually defeated a huge army, 50,000 strong. What are we doing? 50,000 Muslim warriors marched from Egypt and were defeated at the Battle of Ascalon. Not that you need to remember that. So, right to your question, they were there and they collaborated. And it appeared that neither the Fatimid Caliphate or the Seljuks could do anything about it. They had seized the land, they had established themselves. And thus, they won. But here's the problem. Every action, no matter what you all do in your life, no matter what it is, there are always consequences. Sometimes the consequences are good, but oftentimes the consequences are bad. And sometimes the consequences don't appear right away. It will come back. Fate will come back and bite you in the butt weeks or months or years down the road. And that's exactly what happened to the princes. Sure, they went and achieved victory. Sure, they did exactly what the Pope told them to do. They took the land. Sure, they made themselves kings, powerful in their states. But they also sowed the seeds to the two biggest issues that would ultimately result in the downfall of these crusader kingdoms. Bless you. First, they angered the Byzantines. Alexios literally was like, dudes, give me my land back. But these crusaders basically told the emperor, go pound sand. These are our states. And by the way, Catholicism will be practiced there, not the Eastern Christian religion. So the Byzantines would refuse to make alliances with the crusader kingdoms. And we all know the old saying about having a big circle of friends, right? The more friends you have, the less you have to worry about. But the second problem they sowed was how they did it. And I'm going to give you one historically significant example. And I'm using what they did during the siege of Antioch as the example, because if you go to certain countries in the Middle East today, this is how the Crusades are taught, by what the Christian warriors did when they would seize the city of Antioch. All right. We know what a siege is, right? A siege? Who does not know what a siege is? Thank you. That's what I like, honestly. Back during the old times, before the advent of cannon, the only way to take a city was to lay siege to it. You had to encircle it. Because by encircling the city, what are you going to do with it? You're going to prevent anyone from getting out. You're also going to prevent anyone from getting in, right?
Yeah.
And what's eventually going to happen? What? They're going to starve. Because what does not grow usually in cities? Yeah, the one thing we need, food, right, food. So sometimes armies would lay siege to cities for a year, 2 years, 3 years. That's how long it would take to starve them out.
Well, during the siege of Antioch, a problem happened. The crusaders ran out of food, and they tried getting it from the local villages, mostly inhabited by Muslims. But the Muslims refused to do business with the Christians. So the Christians began pillaging the land, taking food. But Antioch, to go back to where it was, go back to my map. Antioch, here, there's not much in the realm of forests or farms. So, the limited food supply came from farther away. So essentially what happened is the crusaders had to start going out further and further and further. And the further they went, the less food there was. So what happens when there's no food? What happens to peoples? You get hungry, exactly. You ever hear the expression called you being hangry? That's the other thing that usually happens to people. When they get really hungry, they get pissed off. To make matters worse, malnutrition also weakens your immune system. So, the crusaders ate what they had, ran out of food, tried pillaging, ran out of food. They even killed their own horses and ate their own horses. But of course, that ended up going away. And it got to the point by December 1098 when pandemic started breaking out, illness started breaking out in the crusader camps, and the men started getting desperate. So, a group of them went to a nearby town, not that you need to remember it, but it's a town called Marat al-Numan. The town was not rich in any way, shape, or form, and they had little to no food themselves. So the crusaders began going house to house, looking for hidden stockpiles. And they really find nothing. But the people of the town try fighting back. And the crusaders began killing them. Why? Simple. If you are a peasant, and I have a sword, and I'm hangry, I am in all likelihood going to kill you for getting in my way. Because again, these were not nice men. These were warriors. And they also had that superiority complex. You know, they believed as being Christians, they were superior because the Pope basically said all non-Catholics are heretics, less than human. So they just started killing. But here's where it gets gross. According to an account of one of the priests that were in the army, I quote, "I shudder to tell that many of our people, harassed by the madness of excessive hunger, began to cut pieces from the buttocks of Saracens already dead, which they then cooked. But when it was not yet roasted by enough fire, they devoured it with savage mouth. They took adult bodies, carved them up, put them in pots, boiled them. Children, they impaled upon spigots and roasted in barbecues. They literally engaged in cannibalism." Well, stories began to spread. Stories not based on truth. Stories based on misinformation.
The soldiers that engaged in cannibalism were executed by their commanders for engaging in ungodly acts. But stories spread from village to village to village that these Christians are demons that will eat your children. You want to talk about rallying the Muslim population? If you don't rise up and fight these guys, they're going to come kill you and eat you.
Worst PR ever. And by the way, I actually had a student last semester that was from Egypt, and that's how they describe the Crusades to this day.
Questions? I love history, by the way. It's one of the reasons why I love history. You can learn about some crazy stuff.
All right. Well, the First Crusade was a success. We know they built their kingdoms. Everything was great, hunky-dory, for about 50 years. That was until, after 50 years of organizing and rallying, the Muslims decided to unite to take their land back. Now, if you're paying attention to what's going on in Palestine, both sides claim that land as their own. The Palestinians and the Israelis. And the truth of the matter is I hate to say it, but to a degree, they're both kind of right. The Jewish people have always been there. But so have the people who claim to be Palestinians. But what's lost in the mess is many of the people who are Jewish today or Muslim today, their ancestors were not. At some point, maybe they were Christians. At some point, their ancestors were Jews.
But it's getting lost because of politics.
But both are willing to die for their cause. Muslims rallied by the stories of these demons, and they were determined to take the land back. The land that had only been Islamic for 400 years. For 500 years before that, it was Christian. It began when the Seljuks made an alliance with the Fatimids and attacked and seized the kingdom of Edessa. Now, interestingly enough, it's at Edessa where the Muslims enacted their revenge. All of the Christians who were in the city that were captured by the Muslim forces were killed, raped, murdered, crucified as payback for what the Crusaders did 50 years before. Long-term consequences. The most gruesome example that came out of their capture of Edessa was when the archbishop, a man by the name of Hugh, gathered the women and the children into the church and begged to the Muslims, as they being God-fearing people, to give mercy to the women and the children. The Muslims chained the church closed and set the building on fire and killed them all, including the archbishop. Well, word eventually, because there was no cell phones, it took many months for word to cross from the Middle East to get back to Europe, but eventually it did. And on December 1st, 1145, the Pope at the time, Eugene III, calls for a crusade. This crusade would be aimed at liberating or taking back Edessa. Now here's where it gets interesting. just like Urban, he issued a bull.
Quantam predecessores.
Quantum predecessores. Quantum, how much? Predecessores, our predecessors. Quantum predecessores, how much our predecessors? This bull, unlike the bulla of the Secretary Cruzada, and the Terra Noria, unlike those, this bull was aimed at one person. The King of France. At the time, the king was Louis VII. He, in the bull, proclaimed it's the duty of the King of France to lead the crusade, because Edessa was taken largely by the French. So essentially the Pope is saying, look, they lived in another kingdom, but they're still your people. It's your job to help out your predecessors. But here's where it gets fascinating. So we know the terms, all right? The terms of the crusade.
You'll get an indulgence for past sins, which will get you out of hell, get you up to heaven quicker, and you can take whatever land you want.
But knowing what he did about how the crusaders were successful in the first crusade, in Eugene's bull, he added another term to the deal. He promised full remission for all sins yesterday, today, and tomorrow. In other words, if you go on this crusade and you engage in horrific acts, even to the extent of cannibalism, if you engage in rape, murder, assault, that is forgiven, because it's about the cause. So go kill those men. Go kill those women. Go kill those memes and pepes. And even the younglings. Kill them all. And so long as you do it in the name of Jesus, it's all good. Well, who in their right mind wouldn't sign up for that? Well, much to the chagrin of the Pope, instead of Louis being the first king to stand up, another king said, ooh, I want in on that deal. And that was Conrad III. Now, technically, he was the ruler of a small kingdom, but he had the title as King of the Germans. I mention that because there was technically no Germany, but he came from one of the 30-odd German kingdoms. But he was the most powerful of them. So all of the other German kings kind of deferred and said, okay, you're kind of like the emperor, if you will. So it would be the Germans who would pick up the cross first. And by the way, his family would control Germany for another 3 centuries. He would go by land. He is the yellow line. But in the story along the lines of, you can't make this stuff up, he had an awful time of it. Awful. Absolutely awful. Nothing but problems. The first problem was he forgot to send advance messages ahead to Constantinople. So here you have an army of tens of thousands of German troops marching along, and suddenly they march into Byzantine territory. So just like what happened to the People's Crusaders, the Byzantine army responded to defend their country. Hundreds of people were killed. Hundreds more were wounded. And thus the German army begins to slowly shrink. Eventually, a parley is had, words are shared, and the emperor, Manuel I, realizes, okay, they're only going through, they're not coming to conquer. So he kind of opens the door. He gives them some extra food, gives them some wagons, and promises when they get down to the coast, he will use his ships and ferry them across over into the Middle East. Just don't attack any of our people. For religious people, this probably should have been the warning sign from God that you probably shouldn't go. At one point, before they get down to the coastline, they're all camping along the river. Now, when you camp along the riverbed, the riverbed is where the water goes. And if you've ever been along a riverbed, you know that usually the riverbed is wider than the river, because there are times when the rivers flood. But for some reason, these guys didn't think of that. So they decided, oh, let's look at this level ground that's completely flat, right along the river. We can just walk, we can get a drink, take a bath, life is good. So we'll set up our camp all along the river. Well, the one thing they didn't have was the Weather Channel app on their phone. Because had they done so, they would have seen that a massive thunderstorm was coming. And the riverbed that they had set up camp on was just a mile or so downstream from a major mountain that still had snow on it. So over the night, massive thunderstorm erupts, the rains hit all the snow on the mountain, and all the snows melt. And guess where the water went? Downstream and hit their camp. Hundreds more soldiers literally drowned in the middle of the night when the flood, which crashed down, ruptured a dam, swelled into the floodplain that they were making their camp. So they continued onward. They get ferried over into Turkey. When they arrive, according to the tales, they didn't quite know what to expect. They found the land was harsh and desolate. But they would fall victim. Conrad would fall victim to a dupe. Now the Seljuks, when they fought, they primarily fought on horseback. They were in many ways similar to the Mongolians. They were effective horseback warriors that used bows and arrows primarily. So they would race up to you real quick, fire a bunch of arrows, and then withdraw. But they would never send their full army. They would only send little parties to taunt you, Conrad saw a few dozen of these Seljuk warriors come and harass his army. He ordered his entire cavalry to follow suit, to chase them down, to kill them. But in doing so, he left his infantry alone. Any of you know anything about like medieval warfare? Battle tactics? What you would do with your infantry soldiers, your foot soldiers, that you would arrange them in some type of formation.
and they would serve the center of your battle force. You usually would keep your cavalry in the rear, or you would position them on your flanks. Because the last thing you want to do is have the enemy get around you. But in order to win battles in the European style of warfare, you needed both. Well, he takes all his cavalry and he sends them away. And he was with them, by the way. So he led the charge. Well, it just so happened the Seljuks did this to bait the cavalry to come out. They led him into a valley where they had a trap laid. And as the European knights come marching or riding, loud noises, all the clanking of the metal, into the valley, the Seljuks up on the hilltops use gravity to their advantage, and they killed them almost all, to a man.
The king himself got hit by two arrows. Out of sheer luck, his bodyguards managed to put him on a horse and ride him out before the Seljuks closed the trap. Because not a single man that was left behind walked away. They were all killed. So now they don't have their cavalry. Conrad himself was put on a ferry and sent back to Constantinople. He left his younger brother in charge. But unfortunately for the younger brother, with no cavalry, all the Seljuks began to do was to continue to harass and continue to harass and continue to harass. And while the infantry tried making it to the city of Sarmine, they never got there. Because eventually they would be decimated. Only a few hundred Germans survived out of about 30,000. Questions? Well, while this mess is going on, Louis VII finally gets his act together and raises his French army. And he literally follows the same path that the Germans had engaged on weeks before. Except when he got to the Byzantine border, he sent advanced word. So he was not attacked. But other than that, they didn't do much better. The first occurred when the Byzantines refused to give him help. Because unbeknownst to Louis, as a consequence of what Conrad did, the emperor, Manuel I, did an enemy of my enemy is my friend strategy. Manuel realized the Seljuks would be enraged after the Europeans went in, and the last thing he wanted was the Seljuks to attack him or his territory. So he negotiated a neutrality pact. Look, Muslims, I won't attack you if you don't attack me. So again, Louis arrives, gets no help. He actually had to drain much of his money to buy the ships to get into Turkey. Then, when he gets over there, literally in the same region where the Germans were smashed, he completely ignored the warnings of the Seljuks. They came across a few dozen of the German survivors, and they were like, look, these guys are crazy. They do crazy things. To make matters worse, the Seljuks had burned much of the land around the landing point. So there's no food for the horses. There's no food for the people. So, when they arrive, instead of going on to Odessa, which was the goal, he basically decides, well, this is awful. So he completely gives up on why the reason why he was there.
Instead, he decides, I'm not going to go fight in Edessa, but instead, I'm going to get in a ship and I'm going to sail down to Jerusalem. And I'm going to go talk to the Crusader kings and see what the heck is going on. Well, unfortunately, when he gets down there, the Crusader kings are not interested in sending their soldiers to go to Edessa because they have a plan. They want to take the city of Damascus, which was an advanced position of the Seleucids. So instead of doing what we were originally going to do, we're going to change the plan because this is going to be easier. But unfortunately, fate was right there. It was a siege. By the time the Crusaders with the French got their army together and marched to Damascus to lay siege, the Seleucids had heard about it. So the Muslims not only sent extra soldiers to the city, but all of the soldiers brought with them tons of food. They had more food in the city than the Crusaders could get from outside of the city. So in the end, the Crusader nobles bailed on Damascus and left Louis by himself. To which the king basically said, well, why am I here? Why am I spending money? Why am I letting my men die? And he decides to quit. Marches away from Damascus, goes to Acre, gets on a ship, sails back to Constantinople, picks up Conrad, and goes back to Europe. And basically says, nope, I want nothing to do with it. So now the Europeans, the Crusaders, don't get along with the Muslims. The Crusaders don't get along with the Byzantines. And now the Europeans don't trust the Crusaders. It's a mess. Questions? Well, why was the reason why they went there in the first place, the Crusaders? What was the reason? What started all of this mess?
Seleucids attacking the Christians.
But what did the Seleucids take?
Jerusalem.
It all started with the city of Jerusalem. Well, guess what happened in 1187? Oh, sure.
Okay. No, please, I don't need to cut it off that form. I didn't get the one. Oh.
Did you watch my video?
Yeah, it's only this, thank you.
You know all this is on my website, right?
Sure.
You know that now, don't you?
Wait, this whole slide presentation is there?
In the form of an outline. Go to prophetmanic.com, go to your class, HST 109, go all the way down to the bottom of the page, all the outlines are there. It's all there. You don't get the pictures, though. I don't want you to waste color ink.
Hopefully write it down.
It is, yes.
When I looked early on in class, I didn't see our class listed.
HST 109.
Oh, I'm just blind.
Okay. No worries. I do it, too. Any other questions? All right. So now, well, this is where I was. Boom. Yeah. Jerusalem falls. October 2nd, 1187.
one of the most brilliant Islamic military commanders of the whole crusading period. None other than Salah ad-Din. Salah ad-Din was a Fatimid warlord, but he willingly served the Seljuks. There's a movie, I don't know if any of you ever seen the movie with Orlando Bloom in it, called The Kingdom of Heaven. It actually is a good visual, not 100% historically accurate, but it's a nice visual to see Salah ad-Din's brilliance. He kind of did the feigned attack retreat into a trap that the Seljuks had done 50 years before to the Germans. Salah ad-Din takes a big army, harasses the walls of Jerusalem, and then quickly retreats into the desert, which prompted the crusaders of the Kingdom of Jerusalem to send their army out into the desert, wearing heavy plate mail armor. What's there not a lot of in the desert?
Water.
So imagine you're wearing 60, 70, 80 pounds of metal in heavy cloth, the padding, and you're marching out into the desert. Every foot that's taken kicks up dust. The horses are kicking up dust, and there's no water in sight. Any of you ever go into a desert during the summertime? How is it? Is it fun? Very hot. So again, nearly 80 pounds of cloth and steel, dust, heat. Well, after about 2 days' march, the crusader warriors are on the verge of complete dehydration. So guess when Salah ad-Din chooses to attack?
Then.
And he nearly wipes them all out. Very smart move. He was brilliant. Brilliant warrior. In fact, he was so brilliant that when Dante wrote the Inferno, he actually did not sentence Salah ad-Din to the lowest levels of hell. Nope, not at all. Gave him props. So, with the army wiped out, Salah ad-Din simply then marches with his army on the city, and there was some resistance, but eventually he got in. Took the city, reclaimed it for the Seljuks. All right. Well, here's where it gets funny, because again, it takes several weeks, if not months, for word to spread. But eventually, word does get to Rome, and according to popular legend, the Pope at the time, Urban III, when he heard the news, he actually had a heart attack and died of a broken heart. Chances are that really didn't happen, but you never know. But nonetheless, the Pope is dead, so the College of Cardinals gathers and they pick a successor. And they select Gregory VIII. And one of Gregory VIII's first orders of business was obviously to gather another army of crusaders to go to war and attempt to now free Jerusalem. But let's go back to the terms of the Crusades. One, you get an indulgence. Two, you can get land or money or whatever. Three, even if you engage in horrific crimes during the war, no problem. Guess how Gregory VIII decides to rally the troops? Blame. He issues his crusading bull, Audita Tremendi. Audita Tremendi. Audita, on hearing. Tremendi. The terrible news. On hearing the terrible news. It was Gregory in his bull that said, this was such a blow to God that my predecessor, Urban, died when he heard the news. All true believing Christians should feel the pain in their hearts over the loss of Jerusalem. But why did Jerusalem fall? It's your fault. And it's your fault. And it's your fault. And it's your fault. It's your fault because you don't believe in God. You don't follow His word. You live in sin. So, the only way to avoid going to hell for your sins is sign up. Get on a boat. Let's go get Jerusalem back. Woo! Team us. Well, in response to this guilt trip, three of the most powerful medieval kings ever to reign joined the cause. The German Emperor, Frederick Barbarossa. Barbarossa is Italian for red beard. Philip II of France, nickname Augustus. Augustus was the nickname that was given to Julius Caesar Octavian, the nephew of the famous Julius Caesar, when he was anointed emperor of Rome. Augustus means the revered. And of course, the future Richard I of England, who is known to history as the Lionhearted. These three kings were the alphas among alphas. Each one were effective, accomplished war leaders. They were powerful rulers in their kingdoms. They had the loyalty of their men, and they would all join the cause. We don't have time to cover all three, but I'll give you a little bit on Barbarossa, and then we'll go home. Why? Well, Barbarossa left first. The reason why he left first was because he knew it was coming. Ironically, he had been preparing for this for his whole life. Ironically, he was one of the survivors of the Second Crusade. Conrad III was his uncle. He was one of the bodyguards that saved the life of Conrad when the Seljuks started laying the trap. He remembered the countryside. He knew the land, and he knew how effective those Seljuks were. So, from the point he became king, he slowly began stashing money. He slowly began training his warriors, because he knew at some point the call would come. So, when Gregory issued his bull, he rallied his soldiers. But he did something interesting. As a term to serve in his army, each soldier had to have enough money to live for 2 years. So if you were poor, you need not apply. He only wanted people who could pay their own way. Because you know why? He learned from learning of the stories of the first two Crusades. You can't brutalize the people. If you treat the people who live outside of the battles effectively, they will help you. Because they want money. They don't care about religion. They don't care about ethnicity. If you go into a Muslim town and you treat the Muslims with respect and you pay them fair prices, the Muslims will sell you stuff.
The same thing with the Byzantines or any of the other Europeans. So, he also told his men, if you commit any crimes against the populations, you will be executed. You have to act like a Christian. The only downside was, he was 66 years old. All right. He would put together an army of about 14,000. And as he marched his way down, other armies joined him. He added about 2,000 Hungarians. He got another 1,500 Bulgarians because the people respected Barbarossa and wanted to fight alongside of him. Because he truly was going to go fight the war for God. He enters Byzantine territory, sends advance word, negotiates, pay money. All of the goods and services he needed to get to Anatolia, all paid for. Fair market value. He gets ferried across and he goes to town. The Seljuks quickly launched an army against him and he slaughters them. Because he doesn't fall for their trick. In fact, he played a few tricks on his own. He constantly made use of the retreat tactic. So the Seljuks came and attacked, put the army up, but let's pretend like we're going to run away. So the Seljuks over-pursued, and he slaughtered them. He then effectively seizes a major city, the port city of Iconium, which was along a major river inlet. How does he do it? He sent spies into the city, and he paid some of the population bribes. And he promised the non-Muslim soldiers they would get sanctuary. So the Muslim soldiers started abusing the Muslim population in the city, and the Muslim people were like, no, dude. So they opened the gates and allowed the city to fall. And he only killed the soldiers. But here's the last click of the day. Unfortunately, life is funny. On June 10th, 1190, while his army was crossing what at the time was called the Selof River, although today the Turks call it the Gukça River, which was one of the longest rivers in Turkey, he fell off his horse. Now the king is at this point 67 years old. He had a birthday. But as he marched, he was insistent on wearing his armor. He wanted to look the part of the warrior. The river was up to the haunches of the horse. So when he slipped in, wearing 80 pounds of metal, guess what he could not do? He couldn't get up. And what happens when you're trapped underwater for too long? You drown. So we die. Now here's the funny thing. According to the Christian chroniclers, it was the armor. He was just had too much weight. He was too old. He couldn't get up. But according to the Muslim chroniclers, because Allah viewed him as a sinner, Allah made sure that his heart ran cold. So he died extinguished like a demon. But nonetheless, the German soldiers who marched on the crusade to be with their king simply said, well, the king is dead, we're going home. So one third of the potential forces turned around and went back to Europe. All right, questions. So your homework for this weekend. Go through, engage, find where the textbook is. Take a look at the extra credit in the reader. If you have time, start piling up some of those questions. Get them in early. But also you have to pick a topic. Open up the book, go all the way through it, see if there's something you know about, see if there's something you're interested about. And then just send me an email, and I'll get back to you. If there's anything concrete you have questions about, don't hesitate to send me a message at any time. Be safe, be happy, and most importantly, stay warm. It's going to be cold this weekend.
So I watched the video, but I have a question about leaving early, just because I have a doctor.
Just let me know.
Okay, I do have a note that excuses me, so I'll send it to you.
Yeah, just let me know. Okay. All that I ask is just give me a heads up.
Okay. we are going down to Florida for softball.
I think I alluded to the potential trips in the video.
Yeah.
So just let me know when it goes.
Yeah, I think it's the 29th.
That was good. That was like the practice then. That was good. Yeah, that would make sense a little before spring break.
Yeah,
that's just as we get closer, just remind me.
And so an email of the days of the
graduation. Yeah, definitely. Because I know
really? Once... We only have two days.
Yeah. Oh, all right.
Yeah. Which is like someone day in March or one day in April.
Okay, of course that's weather dependent.
Yeah,
just communication. That's all I ask.
Okay.
And because it's school related, you'll get excused.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Yep, all right.
Thank you.
We'll see you. Baseball, right?
Yeah.
Same thing. You heard what I said?
And the two positions left also on the baseball team. But so I was thinking of like something like for like the topic. Like the armor, armor and like weapons, the ages. So that'd be something
to
be able to do.
Here's the thing. You're not gonna be able to talk about all of the armor over the ages.
Yeah.
But what you could do is you could talk about certain developments. Because during our time frame, you had the point where you had like the equivalent of the modern tank developed during this time period. So we're talking the heavy plate mail armor, full head to toe. Where the guy couldn't even put it on. He had to be lowered into it and had aids to strap it on. 100 pounds of plate steel. But eventually that would give way to just the chest plate. Mm-hmm. So interestingly enough, there was a development and a reduction. So much occurred. You definitely have the ability to do it.
Okay.
But again, keep it narrow.
Yeah.
You're not going to be able to talk about it all.
Yeah.
So an interesting thing to help narrow it down, because we're going to talk about it, was the Hundred Years' War, which technically was actually 112 years. But England and France went to war in the 1300s, and it didn't finish till the middle of the 1400s. So if you want to focus on that, what was it like at the beginning of war, and what was it like at the end?
Okay.
That'll help you narrow down the scope and still kind of accomplish what you're talking about.
Yeah, okay.
Just take a look at it, and do research. I mean, something like that I would approve. But obviously, if you're going along, you find you can't find enough information, you want to change it, that's fine too.
Okay.
I have no problem with changing topics.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.